Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, Vachoners and citizens of the world. And Truman, thank you so much for playing Patty Maloney and the Chieftains Parting Glass. As a longtime player of Irish music, I mourn for his death and celebrate everything they did.
Boy, Patty Maloney, just amazing. Oh. It was a week ago today, by the way, that he died, and I just saw on YouTube a short clip from his funeral where his son was speaking, and it was just delightful.
Oh, thank you so much. Made me smile. And good morning, Brieflies. This is the Brown Briefly. That was our founder, Brian Brown, who has helped have founded the Brown Briefly, where we try to meet together as friends of goodwill to listen to and discuss and analyze and kind of try to understand the national news and nonsense along with local happenings, and to try to report to you with calm and integrity and kind of curiosity, not hostility and kind of cancel culture and all of that. So good morning and thank you for joining us. I would like to welcome the Brieflies that are here in the studio today, and to ask that, you know, you kind of chip in as I'm just going to introduce you by name and then have you guys go around and talk about your week and, you know, what you've noticed on the island and your interesting events that you have attended or been entranced with this week, so that we can kind of start off with local happenings and news and move on towards some state and national news and controversies that are happening, and finally to some good news that I'm trying to focus on when I read the news. So I will say good morning to Bruce Hallman, Truman O'Brien, our engineer, Kevin Jones, and Gail Kellner, and want to really thank you for being here. Kevin, can I ask you to start this morning? Good morning. What's going on for you?
Good morning, Lynn, and the Brieflies. Hey, you know, I was thinking about what there's a couple of things. One is that as I'm spending more time outdoors around the place here doing a remodel of our deck and porch, the critters that we feed are paying a lot of attention to me now as I'm walking around in the yard. I think they figured out that I'm not a threat. They kind of come out, and when they hear the door open, they kind of look around the corner. And a hummingbird was like literally within arm's reach of me the other day when I was doing some work under a fuchsia bush. So, it's a pleasure to interact in that way. It's a far cry from the commuting days of, you know, catching that 5:45 boat and getting home by 4 o'clock in the afternoon and sort of having dinner and calling it a day.
Yeah. That sounds lovely. Although I have to ask you, Kevin, I'm curious what critters besides the hummingbird you encounter when you get up and go outside.
Oh, well, we have a lot of deer. We have Douglas squirrels, gray squirrels, chipmunks, lots and lots of birds. We have a flicker that looks like it might finally be adopting one of our bird houses that the squirrels have typically inhabited for the 20 or so, 15 at least years that they've been up. But it's quite a variety. And of course, it's seasonal. You know, birds, you know, come and go. We always enjoy the pine siskins when they come in with their, you know, at one time, I think we tried to count like 50 to 60 pine siskins out feeding on the deck. And then the little critters like the butterfly caterpillars that are coasting around looking for a place now to spin their home as they turn into moths or turn into butterflies from caterpillars. So yeah, lots of critters.
So sweet. We're so lucky to live in a rural area.
And of course, we hear the coyotes almost every night, so we have those as well.
Yeah. We do occasionally hear them here on the south end, yeah.
Wow. Gail, go ahead.
I was just going to say, likewise, we do hear the coyotes on the north end here, and I always think it's important to remember they're an important part of the island ecosystem. They take care of a lot of rodents, and I know that one has to be careful, though, with their pets, especially in the evenings, and that you have them tucked safely inside. But they are an amazing animal. Speaking of local news, there was a not too far back an interesting talk here on Vashon about coyotes. And some of you may or may not know this. They have a particular song for mourning when one of them passes. They have a particular call, a howling call that they do. Bruce, you know about this.
Yeah, in fact, if anybody's interested, Bianca Perla and the Vashon Nature Center, along with John Rupp, a retired biologist from Point Defiance Zoo, have been doing a fairly long-term coyote study on the island. They're doing DNA samples from the scat, trying to figure out what the relationship between, there's actually three groups of coyotes on the island, one on Maury, one on the south end, one on the north end. And they're trying to see what kind of interactions going on between those groups and how they're interbreeding, and they're certainly moving around constantly. So, but you can access a lot of that information on the Vashon Nature Center website.
Oh, great.
VashonNatureCenter.org.
That's excellent.
I really appreciate that something that's turning, seems to be changing in the world around us and the human world around us. And that's that acknowledgement of the more than human intelligences, emotional lives that exist out there. We have for a long time held ourselves at the top of some kind of man-made pyramid. And I'm happy to begin to see both in literature as well as in science, a move towards an understanding of the consciousness and of the animal world, as potentially the plant world too, which is always a little bit for all of us to take in when we've lived in a world where we see it as all just just objects around us. It's a very different way than native people would have seen the world.
Well, the intellectual history of that is fairly fascinating because it was in the early 19th century, late 17, early 1800s, with the birth of the Age of Reason, rationalism, that what Western sort of science at the time created was this called the Great Chain of Being, and mm-hmm. it was sort of this great chain of life forms that started with protozoas and, you know, sort of these primitive life forms on the bottom and then up through all kinds. And of course, at the top were white European males at the time. You know, but it's fascinating to go back and look at those the drawings of those great concepts of the great chain of being. And of course, you know, Darwin's, you know, work began to sort of begin to collapse that sort of intellectual construct that dominated Western science, you know, for a century or more. And then today, we certainly have a much more nuanced understanding of that relationship. But all the things that sort of the racism, you know, Africans and Native peoples and, you know, Pacific Islanders were all lower on the chain than white Europeans. And then you get into the apes and the monkeys and the, you know, I mean, it was this great construct of sort of putting, you know, white sort of Europeans at the top.
Right.
And that's Bruce Hallman, our island historian. And Bruce, anything else that you've been involved in this week or that you're up to?
Sure. Today, this has been a momentous week for the neighborhood of Ellisport and KVI Beach. About a year ago, last winter, sometime in December, early January, a giant stump appeared on KVI Beach. You know, and I mean big. It was probably close to 6 feet tall in terms of the root ball, and the trunk itself was close to 4 feet around. And it had been cut, you know, and then obviously washed into the Sound, probably down some river drainage from a logging area. But it was big, and it sat on the beach all spring, all summer, all fall. And then on Sunday's high tide, I looked out in the afternoon. It was there in the morning. I looked out in the afternoon, and it was gone.
Oh, our visitor left.
And our visitor left. And so, and I mean, all summer long, kids have been climbing on it. When the high tides, they're jumping off of it into the water. I mean, it became a real fixture for the summer on the beach. But it's that transience of nature, you know, that sort of life cycle, if you will, you know, things come and things go. And but it was really kind of a, it was kind of sad. We all sort of were mourning that our great Ellisport KVI beach stomp disappeared.
That's our big news from the island of Vashon.
That's right. Yeah, big news in Ellisport.
The stump washed out.
I love that.
Well, I have to tell you just quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
Years ago, when I lived in Ballard, my daughter was very young, and she brought home from somewhere a Mylar balloon that had a face on it, right? And this Mylar balloon got away from her, and of course it was floating around the ceiling of our house, so we just left it. And over the course of about 2 weeks, this silly balloon would travel around the house. you'd be sitting at the computer, and you'd feel this presence, and you'd look around, and here's this stupid balloon over your shoulder watching what you're doing, you know. Oh my gosh, we laughed about that thing. It was there for, I mean, seriously, for a good 2 weeks. So, but when it finally died, it was like yours, it was a sad event when the balloon finally croaked, you know.
Oh, well, gosh. It kind of gets around the age of reason back to the age of magic and mystery, and
go.
I think we need that. That does my heart good to hear.
Indeed.
You report that, Bruce. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we just heard from Truman O'Brien. Truman, anything else in your world,
please? Yeah, a couple of things. I have finally finished the jelly making event. I'm sorry, I should have brought you something.
Oh, no, I have two already.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you're going to have more. Don't leave your car unlocked. They'll show up. But I finally got, and I have a lot of juice left over, so I've been talking with George Gerkish from the Palouse Winery, and he's actually going to give me some pointers, and I'm going to try once again to make some wine to see. We tested my juice and found that it's has a very low sugar content and also a high acid content, which I already knew. But anyway, so I'm going to give it a shot one more time. And I got one more bit of news. Back to my accident back in March. I don't know if I told you at the time, but we had a company called Lightspeed, which is a company that makes aviation headsets and some other aviation supplies. They came out and spent 2 days here on the island and videotaping interviews with Craig and myself and our families and some other folks. And they have now put that out as a 4-part series. It's on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and look up Aviation No Tie Downs, it's called, there's a whole series of stuff that they do. But two of the 4-part series has now been uploaded. So you can see that interview with Craig and me.
Oh, that's
yeah, Kevin.
Cool.
And another, speaking of Truman O'Brien and airplanes and airports, I will have to say that we all now have an opportunity to study carefully our voter's guide.
Oh,
and make
that's
sure
right.
That we weigh all the options and alternatives and considerations. But I figure a guy who can land an airplane in a tree and live to tell about it definitely deserves a spot. So I went through all the agony of having to make this tough decision, but I did cast my vote for Truman O'Brien.
Oh,
now, wait a minute, because everybody can't see that.
Commissioner number 2.
Yes.
So
yes.
Congratulations, Truman.
you
got my vote, and sir, I'm happy to support you.
It's going to be a tough race. You know, I'm unopposed, so I'm hoping that I'll get elected. So.
What are you running for?
Airport commissioner.
Oh, well, how perfect is that?
I am actually already a commissioner. I was appointed after one of the fellows passed away. And so now this time I'm actually running so I can be elected.
Can we expect a reenactment?
No. That'll be a no. Thank you.
You have to watch out for that write-in vote, Truman.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that, Bruce. I'm sure there might be a big calling for that. We don't know yet.
I mean, after all, do we want a guy who crashes an airplane to be part of
the commissioner?
That is another way to look at it.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
No, I would add he survived.
That's
and
right.
So, yes.
That's right.
And I don't think I even said my name earlier. I'm Lynn Kerrigan, your host today. And I was thinking about your, when you're talking about your grapes, Truman, because I went up to my daughter's on Bainbridge Island this last weekend and spent some time trying to put together an old-time cider press that I had bought from a company in Pennsylvania. So I thought, you know, made in America, old-time cider press, what could go wrong? Lacks of appropriate flywheel screws, lack of information that it had to be mounted, this grinder part had to be mounted on some sort of separate wooden, you know, solid platform so you could do the grinding. I thought it fit right on top of the press, but no. And so we spent about 6 hours setting up that cider press and then grinding these hideously knobby, tiny apples that, you know, I think we had probably, I don't know, a bushel of apples, maybe not much more than that, but we got less than a gallon of, of cider after that. And it was all done in that overcast day that was yesterday, you know, where we were freezing and trying to spray things down with the water hose. And it was hilarious. And my grandsons found a coyote den. They think that's what it was because they live on 6 acres on Bainbridge and there's a stream running through their property. Plus, I learned they throw their compost, like the apple pulp, just kind of out in the, you know, trees around their yard area.
Sure, sure.
And so I thought, well, why wouldn't the coyotes come here? But, you know, my six-year-old grandson runs way up, you know, just saying, I found a coyote. Come see, come see.
Oh, boy.
He was just standing there looking at me. Oh, wow. So we went through all the coyote protocols and all of that. It was fun.
Licking his chops.
Yes, yeah. That was my fear. Gail.
Oh, I just wanted to add in, Lynn, that to our listeners out there at the farmer's market, there's been a fellow who's been setting up an apple press on Saturdays, and you can bring your apples, and I don't know if there's a charge or not, or if he takes payment in apple cider or apple vinegar, I don't know, but
that's pretty good
neat.
To know.
If you have lots of apples, like many of us do at this time of year, and not sure what to do with them. And of course, making apple cider is a pretty easy.
Yeah,
easy
once you get it set up, it's just turning your wheel.
Right. But the cider itself pretty much makes itself.
Yes, it does. It was delicious.
If things go wrong, it's delicious apple cider vinegar. So just a little thought out there.
But what I need to do is find out what the varietal is of that apple, because it certainly wasn't a juicy, you know, a happy apple.
Boy.
Go ahead, Drew.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of, you know, the many, many varieties of many of you know this, apples, unless they're grafted, every apple tree is a new and different, genetically different tree produces a genetically different apple.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that we have so many different apples because of that. So a lot of times these small knobby ones were used just for exactly for cider. Water wasn't always safe to drink historically, but cider was, I think, before aspirin, ibuprofen, or Tylenol was available. I think it probably soothed more than one sore back and probably got the children to bed a little early because I think they drank it too.
Well, that was when it was fermented a little. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. That's how, the fermentation process was partially what held it from becoming.
Well, that was also what I thought of the whole time as I was setting this up and grinding is this is not worth it for cider. It would be worth it for alcohol.
There you go. I do want to throw in a quick thing. You mentioned the Saturday market. Mm-hmm. And the very last Saturday market, and I'm sorry, I don't have the date. It's coming up here pretty quick. But the last Saturday market, Voice of Vashon is going to have a booth there.
Oh, fun.
And it's not a fundraiser. We're not asking for money or anything, but we're just there to promote the island connection that Voice of Vashon is. And anyone who has a smart device that they can't figure out how to get our app on, we will help them get our app on their device so that you can hear the Voice of Vashon anywhere, anytime. So anyway, I just want to throw that out. The very last Saturday market, look for the Voice of Vashon.
That'll be fun.
There'll
That's
be
nice.
A number of volunteers there, I'm sure.
Truman, are they still having the Saturday market used to move in the wintertime down to the
VCA
Art Center.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to do that this year. I haven't heard.
Interesting.
Well, stay tuned about that. It's wonderful to have that access to local food and local products and community.
Kevin.
Yeah, I appreciate that service you mentioned, Truman, of installing the app. I mean, my smartphone outsmarts me all the time. So, oftentimes I'm looking for that kind of help. So.
There you go.
That's right.
Well, we'll have some tech guys there who can help get folks have that app installed on their phone or whichever device they want.
Well, another couple of quick things for me. I just wanted you to know my refrigerator finally came off of the barge that's been sitting out there in the Bremerton Bay or whatever that's called there. There have been four or five hugely laden barges out there, and I didn't believe that it would happen, but my refrigerator was delivered on the third date that I was given. And I didn't actually believe it would show up until I got the call at 4 o'clock the night before saying, be prepared for your refrigerator to be there the first delivery of the day. So I spent a full night awake trying to unload everything that was, all around various coolers and in my fridge, getting ready. So the supply chain mess that's happening, I guess eventually breaks here and there, and not just breaks, but repairs itself. I was stunned that I got one, and I hate to brag, but I'm thrilled that I did.
Okay, October 30th. That's the last market.
And I have one last personal question for people. Did anybody besides me see the new James Bond movie that's playing at the theater?
I
just have to tell you how strange it is to see a relaxed, romantic, talkative Bond
really?
Out of Daniel Craig. Kevin.
Lynn, was Johnny Depp still there?
And beside me, you mean?
Yeah, your favorite theater going comedian. Yeah.
He wasn't. I think he only comes out for the Oscar productions, that we do there where we all show up in dress and all of that. But I'm just telling you, it was the oddest Bond thing that was a mashup of all of the other, references to all these other movies. And, I couldn't even figure out what was going on half the time because they were introducing new old characters and winding up new plots and all of that. It was just really an interesting movie, and it's playing for another week. So you get my recommendation and warning that it's different. That's all I'll say. And at the very end of the credits, spoiler alert, it says Bond will return.
Oh.
Because it was definitely Daniel Craig send off and not the Bond send off, apparently.
Hmm.
Kevin.
I just finished reading a book, Churchill's Office of Ungentlemanly Warfare, I think was the title or something of that nature. And they recounted the Fleming family and how they were very involved in sabotage in the attempt to defeat the Nazis. And you just see the real life experiences of Fleming, and I believe his brother. I'm not quite sure which one is exactly involved, if not both. But those lived experiences informing this long-running story of James Bond.
That author, Ian Fleming, wasn't he the one of the British intelligence officers that were involved in that deception regarding D-Day, where they actually floated a dead body right. of a supposed...
Spain, off the coast of Spain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. with information on him misleading people about where they would land in D-Day. So he was the real thing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. And so the two of them apparently were involved, and so fascinating to see that history.
Yeah, I can get aroused just from the James Bond movie music. That theme song, it just wakes me right up. All right. Well, on that note, let's move on. I want to ask
more details than that. Okay.
I realize I was out on a plank with that one, sort of. Okay. So today is this big day of the vaccine mandate deadlines and all of that. And there's a lot of talk today about what's happening because of that. And, you know, including losing the WSU coach, Rolovich, you know, who did not get vaccinated and had a religious exemption denied. And the newspaper today was just full of information about what's happening in the state, about what hospitals are mostly vaccinated, what businesses are going along with it, how a majority, you know, way more than a majority, the you know, most, the great volume of people have followed through and gotten vaccinated. But I guess there's a lot of rolling repercussions from all this. Does anybody have any thoughts about kind of what we're observing right now as the mandates kind of being enforced? Kevin?
Well, I was intrigued by the WSU coach religious exemption. And he now has been fired, right?
Yes.
I heard that this morning. And he is a Catholic. And I said, well, wait a minute, where's the Pope on this? And the Pope is like been vaccinated and is encouraging Catholics to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to see the coach's religious grounds for his religious exemption, given his faith. I thought that was intriguing. But apparently I support that, you know, people who are in positions like that should have the public good at heart. And I'm happy to see that they've made that decision at WSU.
Yeah,
you know, my sense is, I think like many of us, we're reaching vaccine deniers, you know, tolerance level is sort of, mine has eroded totally. I just don't have any sympathy for people who don't, who work for the public, who get paid by the public and don't have the public's interest in mind. You know, they should be fired. And, you know, good luck getting another job someplace like Washington State. Go to Alabama.
Mississippi.
Rue the day. Well, you know, I heard one thing that I will say about it from the religious standpoint, and it's only, I'm reporting what I was hearing on NPR this morning, where they were talking about Rolovich didn't really voice what his religious aspect of the denial, you know, to refusal to do it was. But that was followed by a woman talking about her own hesitancy to get the vaccine because of the history of the vaccine development involving stem cell tissue from, you know, a fetus that had been aborted a long time ago, way back in the trials, is what the NPR folks went on and said, was that, you know, there are people who don't want anything to do with abortion, as we talked all about last week, and somehow have made, you know, that idea of what happened to the development of the vaccines, you know, their religious aspect of not wanting the vaccine. They didn't want anything to do with it. So to be fair, I just thought that was the only religious based explanation I've heard yet. And I don't agree with it, but I can understand it. And I'm like you, Bruce. I just think that individualism has gone too far a little bit in America, and that if we can't understand that the role of government is to preserve and protect and, you know, kind of keep the people safe from this imminent threat of the pandemic, you know, I don't know what more to say to people. So it feels to me like a overreach of individualism at a time when we need, you know, to look out for the commonwealth right now. Anybody else have any other thoughts about it? I saw that.
Let me just add, I mean, you look at schools and you look at the list of vaccination kids have to be able to go to school, and very few people resist that. I mean, there's some deep core of anti-vaxxers out there, and they can choose to send their kids to private school. But, you know, that don't require vaccinations. And there aren't many of those because it's in the public interest. It's in the interest of the kids going to school. And so, you know, my fatigue with this kind of you know, dragging their feet, you know, coming up with every excuse possible to not get vaccinated. I just don't have a lot of tolerance left for that.
Yeah. Kevin?
There is, it's intriguing. You mentioned the example, Lynn, of using a fetal tissue in order to create, as the basis to advance the science. One thing about human intellect is that we're able to find these oftentimes quite creative rationales to support the
it's a good word for
the
it,
decisions
Kevin.
That we would like to make. And the higher the intellect, usually the more apt and able people are to find rationale to support their positions. But I do think that while it's fair to be able to protest your position on certain things, and we certainly have that in our Constitution and encourage that in this country, the common good, in my opinion, overrides your personal concerns about how science moves forward.
And frankly,
a lot of people would have perished had not science moved forward in this area.
That's right. So I
just think that it's a false equivalence, if you will, to try to say that I'm going to not be vaccinated because I disagree with the process.
Yeah, I'm with you. Gail, were you wanting to chip in there?
Oh, I froze out there for a moment and the call dropped for me on the Zoom. So my apologies if I'm a little out of sync with what was said. But I just wanted to mention how we are now scheduled, my understanding, to continue with only a two-boat schedule. It is directly related to the lack of vaccinations by crew members and the inability to secure enough people who consistently will come to work.
Right.
And I find that very interesting. And I'm looking forward to following, as a friend of mine pointed out, just how the union's going to handle that. Like, are these people who refuse to get vaccinated, who have, for many people, causing, at least on islands and other ferry-dependent communities, causing a lot of disruption in their lives. Are they going to continue to be paid to not work because they're on leave because they're unvaccinated? I think it'll be very interesting to see how that goes.
Truman.
Well, my understanding is that, and this, they're still waiting for all the directives to come through, but apparently those people, like the coaches, are not going to be eligible for unemployment, are not going to be eligible for any state benefits that would come from their unemployment status as a result of a personal decision to not get vaccinated. They've essentially been fired for cause, and so they're not eligible for unemployment and that kind of stuff. And which seems to me appropriate. I mean, you need to make choices in your life, and when you make a choice, you need to deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
That the airlines are experiencing some of this issue. Delta, for example, of course, they're based in Atlanta. And their CEO said he's not going to enforce, the whole vaccination mandate. United has fired about 600 people, I think. And I believe that I know the Southwest is having a huge issue with their pilots union. Mm-hmm. And Alaska has, they have a mandate that you will get vaccinated or you will be fired. So I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But the pilots tend to be a little right-wing anyway. So it's kind of interesting to see how that's going to play out. Kevin.
Interesting.
Maybe they could shift their staff around so the pilots who are wanting to be vaccinated will go work for a company whose CEO is vaccinated and wants the people to be, and the other way around, right?
Sure.
And so you could have the vaccinated airline company and the unvaccinated.
I think that's a great idea.
We can choose who we want to fly with, the vaccinated people or the unvaccinated, unmasked people in the airplanes.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, this ferry has crew who's not vaccinated, and I'll wait.
I'll wait for the next one, thanks. Yeah.
Well, let me switch gears for a minute and take us to the national level, where there's lots going on today also. They're trying to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Biden has asked the Supreme Court to overrule the federal appeals judge that supported the Texas abortion restrictions. And Kirsten Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia are sort of sabotaging Biden's, you know, climate change and social programs package that he's desperately trying to get through. And, you know, they're doing some brinkmanship there. There was a New York Times article in Sunday's paper, face-to-face, page-to-page, meaning face-to-face, of one whole article on Kirsten Sinema and what she's trying to do. You know, what is she trying to gain from opposition to this? And Pramila Jayapal from, you know, who's our representative here in Washington State, who's the head of the Progressive Party Democrats in D.C., who's sort of directing some of this, you know, brinkmanship, I guess I'll just call it, you know, some of the ways to try to get these bills passed. And, you know, that's interesting of itself, so I want to throw those out, but add into the mix, they're now also saying in the New York Times Sunday, they mentioned that if they can't get that climate bill passed, they're thinking about going with carbon taxes and fees, which I don't quite understand myself. I don't understand how fining a company who will just pass on the cost to the customers is really going to do much for preventing, you know, and helping climate change. So I'm just throwing out some national issues and seeing, you know, what's sticking with y'all.
Well, the carbon thing, as I understand it, there's, I mean, we have an overall limit that we're trying to get to.
Right.
And the exchanging carbon credits and all of that kind of stuff is a way to level that, where you have some high carbon folks, you know, and some low, they average out, they sell those credits. I don't quite understand how it works, but that's my understanding, that by doing this, they're reducing the overall carbon in the atmosphere, even though some are higher and some are lower. Is that right, Kevin? Do you understand it that way?
There's a couple of different mechanisms in those arrangements. Washington now does have a carbon tax and benefit, I believe. There's a couple of things. One is the escalating cost of carbon in your products means that you pay a higher fee, and that's the basis. And then, so Lynn, what that does is it makes those companies potentially uncompetitive in the market, and it threatens their future, so future earnings. So their stakeholders might decide that that's a bad move on the company's part if they don't, cut their carbon content. So there's a lot of forces at play, the market as well as the shareholders. The other thing is, Truman, that some industries have a difficult time decarbonizing, and some of them are huge. The aerospace industry, certainly, cement, ammonia, which is used in fertilizers. And so they can broker an arrangement of purchasing carbon credits from a company that's able to make more rapid changes. And so there's again a financial penalty for them not reducing their carbon. They have to buy these credits, and there's a financial incentive to the companies who are innovative and able to move quickly. I will say that the last thing I noticed this morning, Lynn, just right after you sent out the script today, is that MoveOn has cited a poll for Kirsten Sinema saying 70% of Arizona Democrats disapprove the job she's doing. Ooh. And that she could lose a Democratic primary by 30 to 40 points to a more progressive challenger. And so MoveOn is going to be launching a public education campaign regarding the job that Senator Sinema is doing to represent the folks of Arizona.
Is she coming up in 20?
Have an impact.
Is she coming up in 22?
I would have to check.
Is she going to be 24?
Yeah, Mark Kelly is up for re-election in 22, and so I believe she is either. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because she was elected in 20, wasn't she?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
So that'd be 26 then. Yeah. I'd have to double check.
That was the gist of what the New York Times was saying. Is that she seems to be in sort of a Trump mold of making a lot of bold statements and personal appearances that seem to, you know, be more style than substance, and is confusing everybody because she's sounding so so much unlike a Democrat and is just sort of planting her flag you know, thinking she can ride those Trump style waves without really accomplishing too much. It's disturbing, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Bruce, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you were trying to chip in there. We're watching all of this.
Gail. Something I think our viewers might be interested in, because it hasn't really been at the top of the news, is that this week there have been many climate protesters in Washington, D.C., attempting to meet with the Department of Interior officials, as well as others moving about Washington, D.C., and including many people, indigenous people and others who are deeply concerned about the climate issues. So I think the idea that there's no pushback, or that everyone's just like fine with this being dropped from the it would be completely false. So I'm happy to hear that at least 70% of Democrats in Arizona.
Yeah, that makes me happy. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Kevin, go ahead.
I will also say, Lynn, regarding that those taxes and fees, economists are routinely quoted as saying that that is the most effective way to actually change the company's product line, right? Mm-hmm. Is to, you know, if you don't like something, put a tax on it. The key thing, and the thing that these companies often fight, is how large the tax should be. And so if the climate provisions have to be modified in the bill, and they turn to taxation, then I think it's incumbent upon those who care about the climate to say, let's make sure the tax is significant so that it actually really has the impact that we want.
Yeah, good.
And the revenues, by the way, from that should go to things that improve the climate, right? Tree planting, carbon capture, other ways to reduce the amount of carbon that we're emitting. So there's a couple of things for people to think about if they get involved in the issue.
Thank you. That's great. Well, I'm going to move us to our sort of last topic for just a minute, which was for me stimulated by waking up again to NPR and hearing Jane Goodall yesterday talking about her book that has been released yesterday on audiobook. And it looks like it's a very low cost product, which because it's the Book of Hope, which she wrote a couple of years ago. She's talking about how we underestimate ourselves, and that we cannot and should not give way to doom and despair. You know, that these issues are so big and so overwhelming that a lot of people, especially in their depression over isolation and COVID and all of the issues that we're facing now, that people are feeling very hopeless and helpless. And she says, no, you know, you don't give up hope. She says there's at least four reasons that we should not give up hope, and that there are, avenues of change. And one is the amazing human intellect. The resilience of nature is number two. The power of young people, number three. And the indomitable human spirit, number four. She has great hope that those will come through for us. And so I'm asking each of you in the last minute, what's your source of hope?
Well, I think just the indomitable spirit of humans in general. I mean, we're survivors, you know. It doesn't matter what the odds are, we survive. And
we'll
I think we're going
out
to do that, as Bruce has said to us many times, you know. We tend to figure out a way to make it work, and I think we will continue. And we're about out of time, guys. Sorry to be the last one.
But. All right. Yep, Kevin.
Well, I was just going to pitch in that people do come together around issues. It sometimes seems late, but when it gets critical, I think people show up, and it's important to continue to do so. So I'm glad.
Right.